Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome in to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Got a good show lined up for you here today, folks. So this is the way this works. Either one, you're hearing me after a successful surgery, or two, you're hearing me from beyond the veil. I'm not quite sure which one this is, but we'll roll with it, huh? Our guest today is Todd Wilcox, and we have a very interesting guest lined up for you today. I don't say this lightly when I say Todd Wilcox. He's not just Todd Wilcox. He's also known as the Slipstream Shaman. And we're going to take you on a journey today into the quantum field as we discuss how you can learn to use your natural abilities in quantum healing. We're also going to be talking about everything from shadow people to ghost hunting to Bigfoot to near-death experiences. Todd has had a lifelong fascination with alternative healing, consciousness expansion, and human potential. His first book, Slipstream Shaman, Using Quantum Healing for Individuals, Communities, the Planet, and Beyond, was recently published, and the next two books in the series will be out soon. Todd also loves talking about the paranormal and hosts his own radio program called My Side of the Universe. Let's bring him in and find out how big that side of the universe really is. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome into Darkness Radio, Todd Wilcox. Todd, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thanks. I'm not sure how big my side is. I try to take a lot, but I also like to share. So it's really it's a give and take. So I'm hoping around 50% is mine.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, if you're sharing, we hope it's at least 50%, if not more.
There we go. Yeah.
Well, let's start out slow, and then we'll grow from there. Slipstream Shaman. Interesting title. What does that mean exactly?
So with shamanism, what shamanism is all about is working in spirit and energy, helping people to fix things in their life. In a place of spirit and energy. So you don't do it typically, you don't do it physically, you do it metaphysically. And that's the shaman side of it. The slipstream is all about speed and ease. And when the wonderful thing about shamanism, it really fits into quantum physics very nicely. And one of the things in quantum physics is a slipstream. And the easiest way I have to describe what a slipstream is imagine you're driving down the freeway, mm-hmm. and a semi comes by you, okay. and you get pushed off to the side as it goes by and then sucked back over once it's passed you, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of the slipstream. It's moving air. It's displacing air. If you were to get behind that semi, now you can go faster than you were going and your RPMs would go down. So you're actually doing more and using less resources. And that's what slipstream is all about with the slipstream shaman. We want to help people find a way to correct things in their life that not only corrects it now, but actually goes to the past to make changes. And then that change pushes you forward into the future for even better changes. And that's what the slipstream part of it is. It's the two things tied together. And what's different from traditional shamanism is all about speed. I try to get things done fast for people. We don't have 3 days to be buried in sand and meditate. We don't have, many of us don't want to take ayahuasca and throw up for a couple of days. As fun as that sounds, it's all about speed. And that's what we look for. When I was training in neuro-linguistic programming several decades ago, one of my teachers always talked about if we have a process that's 7 steps, you better be looking for a way to make it 6, because there's a way. Okay. And once you get to six, try for five. So it's always about what can we eliminate? What can we cut out? I also love Six Sigma and Lean. So I'm always looking for ways to fix a process, have less defects, and do it in less steps. And so that's how the Slipstream came about.
Let me ask you something, Todd. You brought up something which has interested me lately because of one particular individual that I was looking to have on the show because of his background. And his name escapes me right now. I think his last name is Barr. Is it Steve Barr, who is out in Kentucky?
Steve Barr. Yeah, I don't know Steve.
I think that was his name. He was on a show on Vice, and he was healing people through ayahuasca. And
was he a convict at one time?
Yes.
I've seen that. Yes,
it was Kentucky something or another. It was the name of the show. And sadly, he passed away. Unexpectedly, from what I read. I went to his website. I was preparing to ask both he and his wife on the show, and I was just about to reach out over the holidays, and it turns out that Steve passed away, and it wasn't clear on the website. His wife didn't necessarily make it real clear as to why or how he passed away, but between heart issues, COVID, and some other things, Steve fell ill and never quite came back from it. But one of the things that he swore by, if you go and you watch the show, are those 3-day, 5-day ayahuasca journeys. Mm-hmm. And as you described quite brilliantly, Todd, it is a lot of getting to know yourself through ingesting, throwing up, and having these trips through ayahuasca. Why is it that it seems like there's, in order to get closer to the universe, or in order to get in line with the universe, there's suffering, pain, and torture involved with it as well?
You know, that's a very interesting question. And I even believe, even though I'm looking for ways to do things faster and easier and less painful for people, mm-hmm. we're coming, normally when we're trying to make a change is because we're coming from a place of pain. And the pain is there to help us change, you know, to let us know, hey, don't touch that burning rock, hot rock from the, you know, from the fire.
Sure.
So pain's there for a reason. And it might just be one of those situations where there's a price that has to be paid, and you pay it in pain, and it works, you know, for some people to get them to do it. But I think, you know, most people, if you look at most people that are involved in some kind of a healing, like I am, they've had a lot of pain in their life and a lot of, frustration, and the people that read our books have had a lot of pain and frustration, and the pain is a very good driver. It gets us to do many more things than pleasure will. You know, we certainly like to move towards pleasure, but pain will get us moving faster.
Oh, yeah.
And more focused than the pleasure will. So pain is just one of those motivators that we have out there. As much as we like to avoided, it can be very effective, you know, in our evolution and our progress.
But isn't pain also one of those, not only can it be a motivator, but can it also stop you in your tracks? Isn't it one of those things that if we don't have the courage to move forward, that it will set you back in your journey as well?
Absolutely. And so many people, and there's been many times in my life where pain has stopped me from taking action on something, where my perception of taking action, the pain that I might get stops me from the possible pleasure and great things had I moved on, whether it's talking to somebody for a date or going for a job, or if you're in sales, asking for the order. You know, that pain, that fear that's out there that we think about, we normally make much bigger in our minds than it will be when it actually happens. And yes, that certainly stops us in our tracks many times. You see salesmen that are at the theater during the afternoon instead of making calls. You see the people on Friday night wishing they'd asked somebody out during the week. There's all those things that um, the woulda, coulda, shouldas, and pain and fear really get in our way. They're very powerful motivators and demotivators.
One of the things that confuses me, I guess, a little bit, Todd, and as long as I have you here, let me ask you about it. When they talk about ayahuasca, they talk specifically, Steve and his group were talking about Mother I, or I don't think they referred to it as Mother Earth. They said they would say Mother I was with them as they were using ayahuasca, or essentially the spirit behind ayahuasca was there with them and mm-hmm. guiding the journey. Do you believe so much that it is the product you're using that is driving the experience, that's allowing you to have your metaphysical journey in order to heal thyself, so to speak? Or is it really a, you know, would this spirit eventually guide you to your through your journey on a longer trip had you not used the psychedelic medication to begin with?
Yeah, beautiful question. And I think that we can access those same things through meditation, through practice, through intention, that we don't need to go that way. I have not tried ayahuasca, so I can't really tell you, you know, if I would have had a big breakthrough. But I can tell you that the things that I've changed in my life, the things that I've helped other people change, whether it's physical, emotional, mental changes, we didn't need to use that. But through working with our energy and spirit and energy, we were able to make those changes. So I think it's certainly a tool that can be used, but I don't know I truly don't believe you have to use it. I think we're having great breakthroughs, great journeys, great discoveries through meditation and through working with energy.
Very interesting indeed. Let's move forward a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit about your beginnings and what got you into this type of energy work, and we'll move forward. What kind of tickled your fancy when it came to dealing with the metaphysical, and what got you started with the metaphysical, and what kind of opened that door for you?
Sure. So as a little kid, and I don't know if I was just born this way. I don't know if it was the plan for me as I was, you know, getting ready to come to the earth, but I have always been fascinated with things that are a little bit different. As a little kid, I loved science fiction and monster movies. I'd sneak out and watch the Friday night and Saturday night monster movies while my parents fell asleep. And I'm 4 years old watching these things and just loving it. Anything with voodoo or witch doctors, things like that, I was fascinated about how something like that could work. And so the start, I don't know where that kernel came from, but it was at a very young age. I've always wanted to know more about these things. Where this whole thing started, you know, with the book and me helping people, it really boils down to my purpose, which is to help. And I'll tell you about how I found that. Okay. Just two simple words, to help. And then the way it all came about was I was in a paranormal team. And when you're doing different paranormal investigations, you run into other teams all the time. Mm-hmm. When you're in investigations, when you're at conventions, when you're doing different things, and you get to know the other people doing it. And I get a call one day from another group that they're wanting to put a new group together that would have representatives, you know, one or two representatives from many of the local groups that would get together and be a group that went in and helped people when nobody else could. There was a haunting that they couldn't get, that they couldn't make better. Somebody may think they're possessed, you know, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. And we would go in and help. And I said, that's great. But, you know, the teams that aren't helping them are us. You know, it's everybody that we're taking for this team, their teams are the ones that aren't helping. And so we need to find ways to help. And we looked at a number of different things, but the one that really took off for me was they brought a shaman in to teach us how to use our energy to create protection around us and to put it around the people and homes and those things that we were going to go to. And during the training, it was frustrating for me. The shaman was teaching us how to find our energy. And you know, she was teaching us, you're going to find it between your palms. And she's describing it, and she's describing it's red and it's hot and it looks like this. Well, mine was about the color of this shirt. and it was cool.
Okay.
It was very different than what she was describing. And she just kept going on and on and on about how it has to be. And she was describing her experience, trying to force that on us. And it wasn't working for me. And so I kind of disengaged. I listened to what she was teaching because I thought the process would work, but the way she was presenting it wouldn't work for me. And one of the things that I bring up many times in the book is, as you're going through this, as you're learning to do the things that I do, if something doesn't quite ring true, if it doesn't resonate with you, it's okay to adjust it until it does, because it's got to fit you. It's mm-hmm. just like one of my favorite movies, A River Runs Through It.
Mm-hmm.
The dad's teaching the boys how to fly fish.
Yep.
And he's got a metronome out, you know, and it's doing its thing. And he says, that's the rhythm you do. That's the rhythm you do. And he's making them do it over and over. And then when they get older, they're fishing. And the younger brother breaks away with his own rhythm, catches a huge fish. And they just rejoice that he's his own man. And he's come about and he's evolved. And that's what this is all about. Find your way. I'm giving you a blueprint to use, but it's okay if what you end up with is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid of that at all. So through this lady, I learned how to find my energy. I found, and I started just messing with it for protection. I put it on me for protection, put it around my car. I went to the homes that we were working on, and I would just expand it through the home and push out anything that was there. I would put my energy around those people. And with that, as I started doing this and getting success with it, I started spending more and more time with my energy. One day, as I was doing it, all of a sudden I was in a new place. I wasn't sitting in my front room. I was in a place that I now call my quantum room. And what it looked like, and it's evolved since then, what it looked like at the time was just mist, just dark mist kind of undulating around me. It was like being in the middle of a thunderstorm. In a cloud, in a thunderstorm is what it looked like. It was just dark kind of mist moving around. And I could, as I asked for things, they would come out of the mist to me. I asked for a warrior team so that when we went to help these people, I might need warriors to help me get rid of something. And mostly what came to me were dogs that I used to have and other things. And so I was able to build a warrior team and then a love team as I was in this quantum room to help people. And then it progressed from helping people with paranormal problems to helping people with health problems, with money problems, with work problems, with anxiety, with nightmares, you name it. They've asked me for help. And that's where it all came about. And that's where it grew from, is building that quantum room, having a warrior team, a love team. Now we also bring seven generations in to help with the final healing. And I've called it healings for years, but really what it is an energy alignment.
Okay.
So what we're finding are things with this person metaphysically that aren't operating properly. We remove it, heal that area, fill it full of, first we give it energy to clean it up, to debride it, mm-hmm. and then fill it full of love energy to start the healing and keep anything from going back into it. We know that nature abhors a vacuum.
Yep.
And we want to make sure that whatever we take out, we put something else in so that nothing bad comes back in.
Interesting. You know, it this quantum room almost sounds like a portal to pure energy that you're using to work with. Is that an accurate description, but on a quantum level?
I think that's a perfect description. Okay. And as people are using this, and I'm getting feedback from people, wonderful quantum rooms. One lady's on a pond, and she walks down some steps, and she's at a pond. Sometimes she floats in it. Sometimes she puts her feet in it. Sometimes she just looks at it. Hers sounds fantastic. Several people are in space. One's on the moon. Some are underwater. Some are just in the woods. One guy's in his favorite car that he had, you know, just sitting in his car. It can be anything they want. Mine wasn't something that I consciously developed. And I think as people are using this process, they have more input on what their room's going to be. Mine just came about organically because I didn't know about it. But what mine started out is just that dark place with mist that different people would come to me. And then a part of it opened up so I could walk through it to a field this beautiful field with some breeze and that it was really nice to be at. But about a month ago, it changed again. And now I'm somewhere deep space with pure energy. I can see energy streams going through space, going by me, and I can actually float through them. I can see minute particles that are all through space. It looks like it's empty, but it's actually full of things. So these things can change over time. I would assume change is good and growth, that I'm getting to a better and better place to do this, but you never know. you just keep going and having fun with it. So I'm loving what it's evolved into, and being in deep space is beautiful. Seeing the stars, seeing the energy, all the things. I didn't know that there was that kind of energy moving through space, and it's really a beautiful place to be.
I bet it is. Although, you know, there'd be 1,000 questions on my end as far as, you know, am I stepping into a radiation belt? Am I stepping into something that, you know, that potentially could cause me harm? Is there anything when in your quantum room that you fear or something that you think could potentially do you harm?
So, yeah, let me tell you, mostly what we find with people, and this is going to be about 95% of the time, what we find are things that I call a companion. It started out as something that was there for a positive reason. It had a positive intent when it started. So picture being maybe you're 5 years old and you hurt your arm. So I see some wrestling stuff behind you. You know how the wrestlers have stuff on their arms?
Yeah.
And so you put a belt or a rope around your arm to make that bicep feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great today. What if you leave it? Is it going to be helping you in a month? What about a year? What about 10 years? And that's what companions are. They help you now, but as you grow and develop, they can be holding you back. They can be pulling you sideways. They can be keeping you from doing the things you want to do. They can turn into something fearful. And so we remove those and we release their energy back to be something positive again. So we remove them from the person and release that energy back out into the universe where they can go and be happy. These things are a positive. They started with positive intent. They're now hurting us. The next thing's a parasite. And I believe those started as something negative. And I want to talk to everybody right now about road rage.
Sure. Go ahead. Please do.
I think road rage is causing a lot of parasites.
You know, and I'm glad you're talking about this because I'm going to admit something right here to my listening audience. And I'm not proud of this, but I'm quick to anger on the road. I don't do anything about it. I don't run people off the road. But I've got a very short fuse when it comes to what I think is the idiocy of others.
Yes. And Tim, we're kindred spirits.
Okay.
I just know they're doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. And, yes.
What I did was, so I did a polymedela, which is a mini healing. And it's designed to do is find something that a lot of people suffer from and do a healing or an alignment on that and make it better. I knew I had a problem with road rage. So I did it as the subject. But I broadcasted it out to a lot of people. And I did this about 3 months ago. And what I can tell you is my drives are 1,000 times more pleasant. I'm not looking for people that, you know, I still know I can, through experience, I know who's going to cut me off. I know who's going to do something obnoxious, but I just let it go. And it's changed everything for me. My second book is about trauma release, and that full polymedela is going to be in there. And I probably need to do a YouTube video and just read about it so that people can start feeling that energy and start releasing the that negative from the road rage. Because honestly, if I talk to 1,000 people, 997 of them are going to go, oh man, I have the same thing. And so you can imagine what we're all yelling at everybody in the car. Not all of us are taking it to running somebody off the road or anything,
right,
but we're all at least yelling in our mind at the people around us. So that's my way of giving back to the world. And hopefully we'll make it a better place is changing that. So less negative energy is going out and becoming parasites and drawing people's energy. So about 4%, 4.5% of the things we find are parasites. We remove those. We give them cleansing energy, give them love. Most of those change into something good. Some just disappear.
Hmm.
But most change back to something good. The final thing, and I've only run into three of these, And I've literally done hundreds and hundreds of these healings. And only three times have I run into these things that I call an otherworldly. And so, yes, there are things that scare me. The thing that I found most recently is this entity that appears to be like the size of a sun.
Okay.
With billions of tentacles coming off of it, attaching to people and sucking their energy. And as we remove these tentacles from people so they can heal, many times it's a heart problem. And when we remove this, the heart problem gets better. But I don't know how I'm going to deal with this thing because it's a whopper. So that's something that in the future, and it may be a deal where 5 years from now, when there's hundreds and thousands of people practicing this, we can all get together and work on this at once. But if you're okay with it, I'd like to tell a story about the first thing I ran into that scared me.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So I'm working with my friend, Ron, and in the Slipstream Shaman book, this story is in there in more detail than what I'll give here. But Ron's the only name in that book that's actually the person's name.
Okay.
Ron has been abducted by aliens multiple times. He has seen Bigfoot. He goes on ghost hunts all the time. Great guy. Mm-hmm. He started feeling bad, feeling tired. And they found that his heart was failing. And it got down to 13%. And that was 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And they told him he had less than 2 weeks to live. And so we thought we were losing Ron. And I had been doing work with Ron. And we would help, but then it would fall back. Help, and then it would fall back. And one day, when I heard he only had 2 weeks left, I really wanted to do something and help. And so I'm doing the process, and I'm working with him. I've got him in my quantum room. We're in different parts of the state. You don't have to be with me to do this.
Okay.
And as I'm working with him, I see this thing attached to his back going to his heart, and it looked like it was sucking energy. I removed it and tried to see where this thing went. And a part of my quantum room opened up and I see this alien with this big triangle shaped head. And it's looking at me and I'm looking back. We're both scared. And it sends energy at me that just physically knocked me out. Hmm. I'm sitting in my chair at home and I made a Captain Kirk chair to sit in to do my stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm knocked out and I come to in this chair and I'm mad. I wake up, I'm mad. And so I go right back into the quantum room, call Ron back in, find this thing, try to get him, bam, knocks me out again. And I don't know what to do. I try to build my energy up. About a week later, I try it again, same result, knocks me out. And I talked to a friend of mine who does energy work and I was telling her what was going on. And she says, "All right, Marine, here's what you're going to do this time. You're not going in like a Marine. Mm-hmm. Okay. You've learned that that's not working. Remember how you have this love team? How about you give this thing love?" I said, "Okay, well, the other thing's not working. Let's try it." So I went back in, got my love team together. We built up a ton of energy. I opened up the portal, for lack of a better word, in the quantum room so I could see this alien and just blasted it with love. It didn't know what hit it. It was in pain. It was absorbing all this love. And we just sent love, 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 love. I lost contact with it. It was gone.
Huh.
Ron was okay for about 6 months. And his heart didn't get any worse, got a little bit better. And then it started getting bad again. And I knew that this thing was back. I knew that the love had stopped it, but it was back. And so I went into the quantum room, asked my highest level guides to help me with things. And I've got different levels of guides. I've got my highest group. They are all things that aren't of this planet. They don't look anything like us. They don't behave anything like us. In fact, there's three of them. I can only see one clearly. The other two are out of phase. So I know there's a shape there. And one, it's just changing shapes all the time. So I know it's kind of bird-like. The other one, I really don't know what it looks like. But they're all there to help. And I asked these things, "What can I do to help Ron? How do I help Ron?"
Mm-hmm.
And they had me sit down. The four of us were in the quantum room. And as I'm sitting, they're talking to me and there was some singing and different tones going on. And I can feel my arms getting bigger. My hands are getting bigger. It's like when the Hulk starts happening and everything starts getting bigger. The same thing was happening with me. I could feel my shoulders expand and my neck and everything. I'm just feeling huge and strong. And then once I noticed that all of me had transformed, they just started saying words. And it was tear, drive, 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 slam up, smash down, squash. And as soon as they said squash, the quantum room opened a little bit. I saw him in his ship. There was an alien in his ship. I was on top of the ship, ripped the ship open. That was the tear. I hit him like a linebacker would hit a running back and drove him, drive, drive, drive into a wall, slammed him into a ceiling, smashed him on the ground, just started crushing him into a ball.
Wow.
I then sent his ship into the sun and watched the whole thing incinerate. Now, I almost didn't put this in the book because I want to help people. I want to heal. I want the world to be a better place. I want to help raise consciousness.
Right.
I want these good things, but I couldn't get this thing to stop and to leave Ron alone. And that was where the guide sent me. So I felt I had to tell the truth and describe this thing, even though it's violent and I didn't want this to be about violence. But it stopped him. And that was about a little over 5 years ago. Ron is still with us. His heart's still working at about 13%, and they can't believe he's alive. They've put him on various last call medicines, yeah. Telling him this is the last thing we can do. You've only got a few weeks. Then a year goes by. This is the last thing we can do. You can only have a few weeks. And because those things are no longer attached to him, he's able to at least sustain. He's not going back to normal, but he's sustaining. He is getting stronger. He can go out. He loves to go take photographs. He's out doing those things. And so he lives, while he doesn't live a fully active life, he's living a much more active life than he was 6 years ago. And he's still with us. And so, yeah, there's some things out there that scare you. But for the most part, what I find are very positive things.
You said a lot there, and I have some questions about it, Todd. Let me see if a little bit of intuition doesn't hit the mark or if I'm way off the mark.
Okay.
That big scary thing you saw when your friend tells you to throw love at it, did you get the feeling that, and especially when you say it centers on the heart, I told a friend dealing with my own heart issue, I said, I almost feel like when people with heart issues have heart issues, it's almost like emotionally they've been put through the grinder. And physically, we're just now catching up. So emotionally, you've been torn down, and it's almost like you've had your heart broken. Now physically, you're just catching up, and the heart is physically breaking. You're just a step behind. Is it with this creature almost like, you know what? This creature is attacking the heart because it already senses that it's broken internally. But now it's almost time to do the job physically, and we might as well attack it because it's weak, and that's the weakest point.
Truly, I think you're onto something there. When you look at nature, the lions are waiting as the wildebeest go by, and they're looking for that weak link, mm-hmm. Or the gazelles or whatever. The first thing they want to do is go after that weak link, a damaged leg, a sickness, whatever. They want to take out those weak ones. And so, yes, I think the natural thing, and I think it's with predators, is when not just animal predators, but people predators too. Mm-hmm. They find that they identify that weak link in the family. Maybe the kid that the parents don't like as much, and it's obvious. Maybe the one with the low self-confidence, and they identify those individuals and they go after them. So yes, I do agree that these things look for a weakness, and when you have even a small weakness, it goes after it. And the heart really centers around so many emotions. People actually die of a broken heart, mm-hmm. From being so upset. So, yeah, I think so. I think these things look for weakness and they go after it.
So this creature, and it's interesting that you're given the command to almost go after it and smash it after throwing love at it. I think you're throwing love at it to throw it off balance because it's not expecting to get the opposite of what it's looking to do, which is to break down, physically break something down. So mm-hmm. you're throwing it off balance by giving it something counter to what its mission is. But then you're coming at it with brute force, but your brute force is different here, Todd, in that your brute force is coming from a space or a place of love. And I don't mean to get all woo-woo on you here, but you are coming from a place where you're trying to help out a good friend. And it's a different type of force than what this, for lack of a better term, this alien is used to. Right. Would that be accurate?
I think so. Yeah, it certainly wasn't prepared for something to come at it like that. And it was probably weakened by me pouring love into it. And my guides knew when it was time for me to take a different approach. And, I'll do that, but I would prefer, I much prefer when we're able to return things to their natural state of positivity, where they can help the universe again. And that's what a good 95% of what I do is just return energy to its correct place where it can really help.
There's a lot in our field that has to do with energy and positivity and negativity. I don't know. Words are hard today, Todd, that's for sure. But I could see where, you know, when it comes to, especially as you said, paranormal investigation, where you would come in handy in a team to try and turn that sort of stuff around. I tell you what, let's take our break. When we come back, let's start to talk a little bit about where you fit in a paranormal investigation team or in an investigator, as far as investigators, and how you work within a group. Because, you know, one of the things I find is you know, we can kind of separate these groups into hobbyists and actual groups that are trying to get things done. And so I want to talk to you a little bit, Todd, about cleaning up after paranormal teams. That's a subject I think it might be a little bit of a one that might touch you off a little bit. We'll talk about that when we get back. And also, we'll talk a little bit about things like shadow people and more than just common, ordinary ghosts. And we'll even get into our friend Bigfoot as we go on and here in the show. Our guest is Todd Wilcox. He's known as the Slipstream Shaman. There's a book out there, Slipstream Shaman, Using Quantum Healing for Individuals, Communities, the Planet, and Beyond. We have a link to it in the description of this program. The website, there it is. You've got it held up right there. I see that there, Todd. Slipstreamshaman.com is the website. Check it out during the break. When we come back, more with Todd Wilcox, and we'll talk about paranormal investigating and teams. Are you doing more harm than good? We'll talk about it with Todd when we come back right here in the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is Todd Wilcox. He is the Slipstream Shaman. You can go to slipstreamshaman.com to find out more about Todd. He also has a book out there, Slipstream Shaman, Using Quantum Healing for Individuals, Communities, the Planet, and Beyond. Also, Todd, you have a radio show out there called My Side of the Universe. How can people hear you on that radio show?
For most people, you can hear it in the podcast form. It's broadcast from a tertiary station in Utah on Saturday nights, and then it moves to podcast after. So if you type in My Side of the Universe or probably even Todd Wilcox, you'll be able to find it. And there's a lot of shows there. Also, there's a few at my website that will take you right to those links.
Okay.
And there's, we've had some fun people on there. I love Star Trek. We've had Tim Russ. He played Tuvok.
Okay.
Has been on it. Hopefully, we're going to have Adam Nimoy soon. And then my absolute favorite one ever was I had the man named Bobby Clark. He was the person that played the Gorn, the slow-moving lizard man on the original Star Trek. I got to talk to him, and I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. That was one of those monsters that I just loved as a kid, and I got to talk to him.
Nice indeed. Good find. Good job. Yeah, I had it, and it was probably how many years ago now? I want to say it was, 95. Gosh, it was almost 30 years ago now. I was working at Starlog in the Mall of America, and we had a Star Trek room to our store. So you would go into the store, and then in the back of Starlog, there was an actual room, and it was all autographed Star Trek plaques, and you had standees. And I think that room alone was probably worth, it had to be a good $50,000 to $75,000 at the time, in 1995 dollars. And then, man, I tell you, you want to talk about a room you could just hang out in. And it looked like a regular holodeck, the inside of a holodeck. Yeah, that was turned off, of course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a cool room, that's for sure. And then, of course, you get people, you'd have the prices on the plaque. So you'd have a two plaque, you'd have Kirk and Spock, so each one would be signed. So you'd have Shatner and Nimoy. Okay, so you'd have their autographs. And of course, the price is plainly put out there. At that time, that's probably a double plaque. At that time in 95, it was probably going for, anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500, right? So someone would come up and go, "How much for the plaque?" And it's right there on the, just right there, Todd, You'd say, "Well, it says there on the plaque, $1,500. "Oh, yeah, okay. You don't have to be smart about it." "Well, no, it says right there on the plaque, $1,500, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you just say, "Oh, can I wrap it up and get it ready for you today?" "No." "Just looking." You could sell a few, $200-$300 plaques, Sulu or something like that, but it was hard to move those $1,500 to two plaques. They're pretty tough, those double plaques.
Cool thing to have.
Yeah, now you got me thinking about Starlog. But so before the break, we were talking about paranormal investigation, and one of the things that kind of I don't want to say turns my crank because that's the wrong language to use, but one of those things that sticks in my craw, we'll put it that way, Todd.
Yes.
Is you have legitimate paranormal investigation teams out there, but you do have the teams that are hobbyists that want to be a little something more. Now, everybody deserves to get their come up. Everybody deserves to grow and try to get out there and actually help people. And I don't disparage you if you want to help people. I get that. But there is such a thing as finding people who have been trained to help and following in their footsteps. But there are people that get out there too soon, they're a little too ambitious, and they do more harm than good. Talk to me a little bit about some of the harm or some of the signs you see when you walk into a house and what it is you have to do in order to correct some of that harm that happens when you walk into a house that's been handled less than expertly by a hobbyist team. And again, what you have to do to clean that stuff up.
Sure. So, probably the biggest thing is, and I've lost the word right now, but there's teams that go in and they mouth off to whatever's there. I'm here to fight you. You're nothing. You're stupid. They're yelling,
provoking,
they're antagonizing what's there.
Yeah. Provoking. Yeah.
Provoking. Yes. Provoking. I lost that word.
Yeah.
So they go in and they provoke and they think that they can be as obnoxious as they want and say, this all came from me and only me. Don't hold it against the people that live here. Well, that's not the way it works. They've built up this negative energy and then they left. And the provoking is really just things that people do for viewers, to get people to watch them on TV, to get that excitement, to get that adrenaline. They want the adrenaline junkies to be involved in it. And we also, when we deal with that, now you've got something that maybe was running at a 5 scaring people. Now it's at a 7 or an 8. So you have to deal with that energy. And you also have to work with the people and help them understand that is not the way to do things. And that we talk to these things, we work with these things just like we would want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you have to retrain the people that live in the house. They think after watching these people do the provoking and do the different things that it's okay to do that. And it's not, it's escalating and you want to de-escalate. So you have to train the people that live there to stop it and let them know that if they do get another group in, don't let them do those kind of things. We're here to release energy, to de-escalate and to make things better. And so, there's people on my team. I would do the energy stuff. The couple of the girls would be thinking and trying to interact and just get a feel for what's going on. If there was like anxiety in the house, if there was hatred or whatever, if they could pick up on that. And me and another gentleman were looking purely at energy. And the funny thing is the almost without exception, when we'd go to a house that somebody had really gone in and wound these things up, when we go in and treat things with respect, we got so many EVPs, electronic voice phenomenon, that we would hear that would say, I love you. And I love Todd. We have at least 20 EVPs that say, I love Todd, but we would get a lot of I love yous in these houses that had escalated. And when they saw that we were being decent and treating them with respect, their behavior changed. And I can't tell you how many times I have an EVP that says love on it, hundreds. And that doesn't sell TV shows. Get out and things like that sell TV shows.
True.
And we've had our share of get outs. But so many times we get that love and my, the lady that I started the group with, she always says, yep, it's all about Todd. Everybody loves Todd. That was the running joke and she was kidding, I think, but, we got just tons of love responses. So, when you're putting out good energy and you're working with the people to help them and helping them understand not to invite things back in.
Yeah.
They get that adrenaline rush and they get a bit of their identity involved too. well, I've got this haunting, and they don't want to let it go. So groups will come in and get rid of something, but then they invite it back in. And so that's another part of the training is, you know, don't invite these things back in. We're working to get them gone.
Yeah.
Don't invite it back in. You're going to want to. And we spend a lot of time on that. So those are the big things is treating things with respect and changing the approach from the group before and really just working with the energy and making it a better place and helping people understand where they fit in everything.
One of the things in paranormal investigating that I think has been kind of an enigma, kind of a big mystery, if you will, is shadow people. And I think different people have different ideas as to what they are and what they aren't. Where do you stand on shadow people and what do you think they are exactly?
All right. This is one of my favorite topics. In the paranormal world, many of the people in paranormal investigations have never had the experience. They've gone on ghost hunts and they hear EVPs, and that's about as far as it goes. A few have maybe had UFO experiences. A few may have been contacted or abducted. But I'm going to tell you that somewhere between 15 and 25% of the population has seen shadow people mm-hmm. at one time in their life. It is shocking when you go to in front of a group, and it doesn't matter if it's a business group, it's a paranormal group or whatever, and you describe, hey, have you ever seen this thing? It's about 6 feet tall. It's dark, looks like it has a hat or a helmet on, a long cape or jacket. You know it has a face, but you can't see it. Have you ever seen that? You'd be shocked how many people raise their hand. There is a huge amount of people that have seen this thing. It's called shadow people. It's called the hat man. I call it the watching man mm-hmm. because when I've seen it, it just watches. And most of the people I have talked to, and I've talked to hundreds, there's probably going to be a book in the future about it for me. And I've talked to hundreds of people because it fascinates me, but very seldom are they afraid. I've talked, and I've lost track of how many I've talked to. I only know three people that have been afraid when they've seen these things and that have seen eyes. And the funny thing is, all three of them are retired police officers. And I don't know where the tie-in, you know, if that's just some weird coincidence, but yeah. Three of them have seen these things. Two saw yellow eyes, one saw red eye. And they were all terrified of these things. I've never seen any with eyes. It's just a shadowy face.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at first, the first time I remember seeing them, I was in my 30s. That wasn't the first time I saw them, but it's the first time I remembered it. I did some timeline work and realized I'd been seeing these things for a long time. But when I first saw it, I was just really curious, you know, why is this thing watching me? It was watching me stalk a plumbing aisle at a hardware store overnight. And that was the only place I saw it, was in that plumbing aisle. And there was no rhyme or reason to the time, but I'd just be working, feel like someone was watching me, look back, there it is. And I got real excited and I just assumed it was a ghost. And the more I started talking to people, the less I thought it was a ghost, the more I started thinking about it. Since that time, like I said, I've talked to hundreds of people about it, and I did a timeline regression, and I went back to a place where I was about 4, maybe 5 years old. I was in the basement of the house we lived in, and I had one of those horses, plastic horse that you'd get on. It had two springs in front, two springs in back, and it looked yep. like you were riding a horse.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd get on that thing and just go nuts. You know, I love the Lone Ranger, and so I'm riding that thing like a maniac, you know, and there was 12 of these things in that basement room watching me. And I didn't think anything of it. You know, it's just, you know, it was no different than having a peanut butter sandwich there with me.
Yeah.
And I'm just riding this horse as fast as it would go. And there's 12 of them watching me. And then I saw them, you know, in different parts of my life, and I still see them. And it's never for a long time. You know, it's seconds and partial seconds that you see these things. It's very fast, but a lot of people have seen them. And typically they just say, yeah, it was just looking at me. And so I've gone back and forth on what they are. One of the things that leads me to believe that they may be an aspect of us is that as I was talking to one gentleman, and this is a guy that I knew, and I feel confident in what he's telling me. He said one of the times that he saw this thing, it was standing at the foot of his bed, and he wakes up and he's in sleep paralysis, and it's just standing there staring at him. Then it starts walking through him, through the bed, through him. It gets behind him. So now it's like basically in the wall looking out. And as soon as it was behind him, his perspective changed from him looking up at this thing to being this thing looking down at his body.
Oh,
and he gets the words that say, "I am you." So it's saying, "I'm you." And he doesn't know if it's like an end of life review, and he's reviewing himself in that moment. He wasn't sure if it's just an older part of him that's time traveling to check on him. But he believes it's some aspect of him, some aspect of his spirit. And I wonder if that could be true. You know, there's thoughts that it's that what we're seeing are people doing remote viewing. Mm-hmm. They're remote viewing us, and we see them while they do that. And that's what we're seeing. There's thoughts that it's an alien watching us somehow through time, or that it's a time traveler, not even an alien, watching us through time. A lot of different theories. I tend to think that it has some kind of tie-in to us. Even though I've on occasion seen multiple of these things, I think there's a tie-in to each of us where we're watching ourselves from a different place.
Really? I want to ask you this question. I've asked this of a few different guests, and I have the weirdest thing happen around shadow people, and our audience is familiar with it. I want to throw it past you. I actually, you're going to think this is funny, Todd. I actually have the ability to drive people or shadow people away from me.
Okay.
And it's just with a look. That's all it is. It's just staring intently at a shadow person, and it flees from me. It runs. And it's happened all over the United States. It's not just in one particular area. It's happened at Mansfield Reformatory in the administration building, you know, where the staircase separates. You know, you've got that big staircase that's been featured in Shawshank Redemption. It's happened at Waverly Hills on the fourth floor. I was with Tina Mattingly, the owner of Waverly Hills. So it was myself, Chip Coffey, and Tina Mattingly. I told Tina I had never seen a shadow person before. This was the first time I'd ever seen one. And she said, "Oh, come on, honey. I'm going to show you what a shadow person really looks like." And she was going to take me up to go see Big Black, right? And Chip Coffey comes right up behind me. And all of a sudden, before I know it, we're like the Pied Piper. We've got 5 to 10, then 15 people coming along with who claim they'd never seen one either. And it was really supposed to be a private party, but we end up taking these people with us. And Tina goes, "There's one right there." And I look at it, and it starts to run. And she goes, "Come on, y'all." And we start running after the shadow person. And we chased it all over the fourth floor. And she goes, "I've never seen a shadow person run before." She goes, "Come on, let's keep up with it." And we ran after this thing all over. And this was before any of the renovations that the recent renovations they've done. This was probably almost, I want to say it was probably 11, 12 years ago now. And we're running all over that fourth floor until finally it turned and ran into an unfinished like stool and sink combo. Where you just saw the stool in the sink, there were no walls around it. It was just 2x4s, and it, boom, ran into it and disappeared. And Tina said, "If that ain't the damnedest thing I've ever seen." Right?
That's a lot coming from somebody that's in there.
Right. That was the first time that had ever happened to me. I'll tell you a story from Ohio State here in a second. Ohio State Reformatory. Palmer House in Minnesota. And again, this is a review for a lot of the people who have heard these stories before. We're investigating in the cafeteria. I've got a group of people with me, and in the cafe, it's not a cafeteria, but in the cafe, we're sitting in there, and there's reports of different shadow people that occasionally show up in the cafe. and we hear noise back in the kitchen. There's nobody, there's no employees in the building whatsoever. We've been given the keys for the building. Well, we hear pots and pans banging around in the kitchen. And I said, who wants to come back with me and investigate and see what that noise is? Nobody volunteers. I said, come on, guys, you paid all this money to come back here to the, you know, to investigate, and you don't want to go see, you know, what's back there and what made that noise? Nope, nobody wants to go. Well, just at that time, they yell for people to switch groups, and I decide I'm going to go back there. Now, I have a condition called Charcot foot, and at the time, I'm on a four-wheel knee caddy. So I decide I'm going to go the length of the lunch counter and then take a left and go in through the swinging doors and go see for myself. Well, I'm all by myself. There's nobody in the room with me. And I call out to whatever's in there, like it's because there's rumors that there's a kid ghost that's around there that plays on the stairs and whatnot. So I started talking to it like it was a little kid. And so I'm kind of taunting it. And I said, do you want me to come in there and play with you? I'll come in there and play with you. Here I come. I said, if you want me to come in there and play with you, I said, go ahead and bang the pots and pans once. So I heard a bang. I said, okay.
Wow.
I said, if you want me to come in there, if you really want me to come in there, bang them twice. And I heard bang, bang. And I was like, okay, here I come. I'm coming in there. You know, I was just being playful. Well, I get to the edge of the lunch counter. And as I do, a shorter shadow person, probably about 3 foot tall, comes running through the double doors, like, you know, doesn't move the doors at all, but runs through it, stops and sees me, and then boom, takes off in the other direction and runs through the brick wall of the back of the cafe and goes out of the building. Disappears. Right? Just like saw me in kind of an oh shit minute, and then boom, takes off. Right? With the Ohio State Reformatory, and I'll let this be the last one. There's plenty of these stories, by the way, Todd. But the last one is an amazing story in that, again, I've got charcoal foot. I'm sitting with the people who can't take the stairs because there's too many stairs. So we're all kind of sitting at the bottom of the stairs, and we're kind of running EVP sessions and doing whatever to see if we can catch anything on recorder. And basically just talking about the, you know, different experiences we've had and haunted experiences. And in this giant picture window in between the two staircases, it's a split level staircase. It's a huge staircase. If you've seen Shawshank Redemption, in that administration building, when the moon is full, you can see these shadow people walk back and forth on the staircase, right? It's kind of an eerie sight, but it's kind of cool at the same time.
Yeah.
So I've got my head down, knowing now that when I look at these things, they run, okay? But I want people to see these shadow people. So I'm sitting sideways to the staircase. It's off to my left. And I've got my head down. And I'm talking to people, and we're just basically talking about the different experiences they've had over the weekend. Somebody says to me, hey, Tim, look up there. There's shadow people. I said, I don't dare. I said, just go ahead and enjoy them. Just, you know, tell me what they're doing. They're walking back and forth, Tim. It's really creepy. You got to see this. I said, no, I don't. I don't need to see it. I said, unless you want to see them run. They're like, what? I said, I can make them run away. They said, no, you can't. You can't do that. I said, I can make them run away just by looking at them. They said, no, you can't. I said, I'll bet you $5. the one guy goes, I'll take that bet. $5? Sure. I said, okay. So I said, get your money out. You ready? They're like, yep. And I looked right up the staircase. I turned to my left and I looked, and it was like roaches scattering with the light on, Todd. They just all took off. There was probably about five of them at the top of the staircase.
Wow.
And they didn't believe it. They were like, what the hell just happened? That was weird. I said, here, let me put my head back down. I'll show you. I'll prove it. I'll do it again. And so we waited. We probably waited about 20, 30 minutes. And here comes another one. It was probably one or two more. And I said, watch, I'll do it again. I said, hold on to your money. So I did it again. I looked up the staircase. Boom, they disappear yet again. I said, okay, with that in mind, now I'm going to take my leave so you guys can enjoy the shadow people. And I got up and I left. So with that in mind, I've always been of a mind that shadow people aren't necessarily, because I've heard that description that you've used, that shadow people are us, or maybe they're time travelers, or maybe they're alien of alien nature. I don't tend to think so. I tend to think that they're of a lower spiritual vibration of some sort. Now, I'm not saying that they're malevolent or that they are of evil intent, just that they, although some people will argue that, some people have had very, very bad experiences with shadow people. I'm just saying I think they're of a lower vibration. I don't know what their purpose is, but that they are.
Yeah, that's very possible. And what their purpose are, I don't know. That's a wonderful story. I'm really curious what it is about your energy that makes them scatter. I think that's pretty cool. Something to investigate. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, I think it's really it's a cool party trick. I know that, but
It certainly is.
It doesn't help me when I'm investigating that much.
Right, that much. Yeah.
That's for sure. Want to talk to you a little bit about Bigfoot. Speaking of, is it dangerous or is it friendly? I've heard both sides of that coin. I want to talk to you a little bit about Bigfoot. Do you believe Bigfoot is more of a, as they call the sides, is it an aper? Is this a creature we're dealing with, or is this an interdimensional traveler, especially for someone that does reach into a quantum realm and reaches in, pulls energy to heal people? Is this an interdimensional traveler that you've run into as you're healing people from a quantum realm?
Yes. And I do, I'm in the camp of that it's an interdimensional. I don't believe it's just a crazy monkey, you know, giant monkey running around that's going to kill people.
Okay.
I told you about my highest level guides. Mm-hmm. There's three of them. Right below them are two animal spirit guides. One's a bull elk. The other one is a female Sasquatch. And when I got her as a guide, I was in a desert area, and there was a mountain range going down the side of where I was. And you could see a long way down. You could probably see, I don't know, as far as your eye can see, you know, and I'm guessing it was 10 plus miles that you could see down there. And when she came to me and kind of possessed me, I guess you'd say, when I received her, I was her for a minute. I was walking on the ice, not slipping. It was really awesome. And I looked down that mountain range, and I knew that if I stepped away from this group I was with, that I could travel down that mountain range in milliseconds. And I don't know if it's because they go a certain distance, you know, pop in and out of dimension and they go a long way. But I knew that if I left that group, I could be miles and miles away in milliseconds. And I wanted to go walking with her, be like her. And so I would say that just like with humans, there's mostly good ones and then there's some bad ones.
Okay.
But I don't think, again, you know, what sells TV, that getting scared, that getting that adrenaline, you know, having the rocks hit the cabin, you know, that's what sells TV. My experience, and this has all been in a spirit realm, is that is not the case. And the people that I've talked to that have seen Bigfoot many times will say things like, there was a time in my life where I wouldn't have been able to see them because I was kind of a bad person. I've changed my ways. I'm better now. And they wouldn't let me see them before. And so I get a lot of that where people really believe because they've changed their ways and they're better people that the Bigfoot has presented themselves to them, and that you're not going to get to see them if you're there for trouble. Another friend of mine, PJ Jensen, says that you're not going to run into these things if you're packing weapons either. So when he's out in the woods looking looking for Bigfoot and interacting with Bigfoot. He never goes armed. Neither did Ron when he could go out there. But they always go unarmed because they believe that the Bigfoot knows that you've got that, and they're just not going to make themselves known if you're going to be shooting at them. And so I think there's an interaction. I've talked to many, many people that felt like they had a psychic connection with the things, and it was telling them, don't go down here. You need to go this way. Really guiding them away from an area that they shouldn't be. And I don't know. And we don't know if it was because there was maybe a bear or a cougar, or if the Bigfoot were there and just wanted to be left alone, and it was telling them to go the other way. So there's a psychic connection there. I think they're more evolved than we could ever guess. And I do believe that they can travel transdimensionally. And many people have seen them when they've been abducted on the ships. And Ron is one of them. He has seen them on the ships when he's been on there.
Really? Let me ask you this, Todd. Do you feel like, you say you don't see them when you're armed or when you have weapons. Do you feel like a Bigfoot could be harmed by one of our weapons, or is it just one of those things that's not realistic? They just don't want to deal with the issue.
Yeah, I think they could be if accidents happen, they don't get out in time. There's stories of people shooting at Bigfoot and thinking that they hit them, but there's a flash and they find nothing.
Okay.
And so I don't know if that's just them going dimensional, and leaving a residue where they normally wouldn't because they were going so fast. PJ believes that they know if you have a weapon, and they don't let themselves be known if you do. But there are people that have claimed to have shot at them, and there's a guy, I think he's in Washington, that has claimed he shot a juvenile Bigfoot one time and actually covered it up, and he was going to bring people back to look at it, but he was afraid to go back there because the other ones were there coming after him. So I don't know. It's one of those great debates. I love the whole thing with Bigfoot. I'm sure there's something there. One, because it comes to me and is one of my guides, but when there's stories of Bigfoot on every continent that's populated, there's some kind of a Bigfoot story. How does that happen? So I know there's something there. I don't know exactly how it works, but I think there's a transdimensional aspect about it that lets them come in and out and move great distances. I've heard other people talk about, I always liked leaving things. I'd find a Bigfoot tree when I would do this stuff, and I would usually leave coins up high, 7 or 8 feet high on a branch, just to see what would happen. And other people leave things. And I've heard stories of people being 5, 6, 7 hours from their home, setting up a Bigfoot tree, putting stuff out, or maybe building something in an odd place, and leaving trinkets there, getting home and finding those things in their backyard. So there's something odd going on, and more than I've been able to find out. And it's one of those great curiosities of mine. I would love to know, and I would love to spend physical time with them. And one of my bucket list items is to interview a Sasquatch for my radio show.
You and me both. I mean, if I could get one to talk to me, yeah, I'd do it in a minute. Has your Sasquatch guide ever said what it would take for us as a society to get them to reveal themselves to us? I mean, other than completely becoming a tranquil society and becoming completely peaceful. I mean, is there some sort of medium ground where we could meet where they would decide that they would become more visible?
I haven't had that conversation, and I really don't have long conversations with her, but that's something I need to do. She does come to me when I have questions, when I need some help. But I really do need to spend some time in the quantum room with her, just talking. Mm-hmm. And talking about those things. What will it take? Is there a plan? Would you do this? Those kind of questions, and see what we need to do, where we need to go for that to happen. And that's one of the things that I would really love to have a better feel for and get that opportunity to physically be in the presence of one.
I'm curious, do you know what exactly Sasquatch eats? I mean, are they vegetarian? Do they eat meat? Do they eat a little of both?
Yeah, great question. And in the quantum room, you can't smell anything's breath. So I don't know from that. And again, I haven't had that conversation, but it's something that I'm certainly curious about. My gut feeling is that they're much like us and other primates and different things that look, you know, similar, that they're omnivores and that will eat vegetable and animal. But yeah, I don't know. That's a really great question. And I haven't investigated that. Okay. There's so many wonderful things to investigate, and that's certainly going to be farther up my list after our conversation.
Right on. Let's talk a little bit about near-death experiences. When we had Dr. Scott Taylor on last week, we were talking about shared death experience. I'm curious, one of the questions that I had asked him about is, how do you verify, especially when you have a shared death experience, how do you verify that what you're experiencing is real, that it's a genuine experience? I guess I would ask you this, Todd, how do you know that when you have a near-death experience that what you're seeing is really the other side? How do you know that what, and even when you're dealing with things in the quantum room, how do you know that what you're seeing is actually what you're dealing with is a genuine entity? How do you verify some of these things? Do you get verifiers from things from the other side, or do you know that, you know, that they're for real?
Yeah. As far as verifying near-death experiences, that's a hard one. Now, I've had two. The first one was when I was about 6 months old, would be considered a SIDS. My parents came in, they lived in an apartment that had a stove that had one of those old timers on it. You know, you could set it for 15 minutes and it would go ding when it would go off. Well, this thing didn't work. They could not get it to work. They would set it. It didn't move, didn't ring, nothing. One night it goes off. They both jump out of bed and run to me. And I was blue and I was gone. And I was with this female energy, essence energy. She didn't really, she looked like a woman, but not exactly. She, you know, looked spirit. And, she was holding me saying, you should have been mine. You should have been mine. You should have come to me, these kind of things. And then a male presence came over and said, you have to let him go. And while this was happening, and I'm looking at both of them, there was also the traditional tunnel I could see, kind of off in the distance, and it was huge. It was gigantic, and I could see tiny little things on the edge of it, people, animals moving on the edges, you know, up on the top, the bottom, the sides, everywhere on that. And then there was also these things flying through the middle of it. And so I could see a lot of activity in that tunnel. I wasn't in any way drawn to the tunnel. But these two things were talking to me. And after about the third time that the male presence said, you have to send him back, I was back in my body. And I just remember gigantic pain. Everything hurt from not having oxygen for however long that was.
Oh my God.
And that's really all I remember about being back. And then in high school, I had a massive hernia, and this was late 70s. And when you had a hernia operation at that time, you stayed in the hospital for about a week. It was, they kept an eye on you. There was a lot of things that could go wrong. And I went in, had the surgery. And while I'm in the operating room, I left my body. I'm watching from the corner of the operating room, looking down at what was going on. I see my doctor yelling at the anesthesiologist. The anesthesiologist is yelling back at him. They're freaking out. One of the nurses took off and ran out of the room. And then I got sucked back into my body. And I didn't feel anything or anything like that, but I remembered it. The next day, he was doing his rounds, and I asked him, hey, how long was I dead? And he turned white. Absolutely. Wow. White. He says, what do you mean? I said, you know, that part where I died and you were yelling at the anesthesiologist and the nurse ran out of the room. He didn't talk. He didn't say a thing. He said, no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. He just kept shaking his head. That didn't happen. He never came back and visited me even one time after that. And I'm there a week. The rest of the time, it was a different surgeon checking on me, checking the status of the repair and everything. And he wanted no part of that conversation. So I know there's something on the other side. And then the other part of leaving the body, the death experience, I've left my body, you know, just out of body experiences during fights. For some reason, I was in a couple fights as a young man, mm-hmm. and I got jumped by two brothers one time in an apartment I lived in when I was in like the fourth or fifth grade. And I watched the fight from up above again, just watched it. And then in grade school, in the sixth grade, I got another fight in the gym and I left my body and I'm watching it from up in the rafters. And I'm looking at the dirt on the rafters. And there was a piece of food. It was the cafeteria, the gym, everything. And there was a piece of rotted food that was up there that I saw in it. So I was watching these things. So I know we can leave our body. I know that there's the spirit aspect to us, that our body is not the end of our existence or the full scope of our existence. What is out there, I don't know. And I think we're made to forget when we come here. And you know, since we're talking about near death experiences and that, I also believe that there's more than one life happening. You know, people call it past lives. I look more at it as concurrent lives.
Okay.
When I'm in the quantum room, time is different. And I think it's the same way with our lives, that we're doing many things at once. When I'm writing down the experiences I have in the quantum room, future tense, past tense, present tense, are all intertwined in the same sentence. They make no sense when you're reading it. The words are exactly perfect for my experience, but my editor looks at it and says, okay, Todd, it might be perfect for your experience, but it's not how people that learned English can read it.
Yeah.
And so I have to pick a tense for a sentence, even though the words don't fit what I'm trying to say to the experience. I have to find the right way to say it so that present tense, future tense, past tense work in a sentence for somebody that's learned English. So I think our lives are that way. It's not necessarily a past life that actually happened to us five generations ago, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. I think it's all happening somehow at the same time. And we just don't understand how time outside of our body works. Time inside our body is very linear. Mm-hmm. You know, you take a spaghetti noodle and you hold it out straight, and that's what time looks like to us.
Sure. Yeah.
But when you're in the quantum room, you can take that noodle and wad it all up into a ball. And that's more what time looks like. Different times are touching each other and things are intertwining, intermeshed. And it's just all over the place. And I don't think we have a good grasp on what it really means.
Let's go down a little bit of a slippery slope real quick here. And let's say you and I are in your quantum room. And I say to you, Todd, I want to look at a past life. I want to see if I have a past life in a certain time, or if I ever existed at a certain time, like say in the Middle Ages. Is it possible at that time that you and I sitting side by side, you could show me if I existed at that time, or you could show me an ancestor that existed at that time, that I could actually look at myself or be beside myself at that time in your quantum room?
You know, I would say yes, it's possible, because when you're in that quantum space, it's like you're a superhero. You can truly do just about anything you want. I haven't attempted anything like that. You know, I've gotten on my timeline and followed it to different things. Interestingly, when I'm doing that, when I try to do past life or concurrent life regression, I'm never a human. It's always something different. And it's always the time of death when I do it. So, one of the things that I was a creature that had arms that kind of looked arms, legs, everything that was segmented like my watch
band. Yeah.
And that was how I moved. And I can remember looking at my hand, you know, falling down as I was dying, and then it went dark. Another thing that I was a thing that looked kind of like a walking turtle with big bow legs. And something had gone through my neck and into my body and killed me. And I felt that. And I felt myself fall forward. I've never been able to be in a place where I'm interacting with things. It's just been the time of death, and they're all different creatures. One was in the water, a water creature. It's never been a human before. So I don't know if this is just my first or my only incarnation on this planet, but all the regression that I've done, it's always been some kind of an alien thing. And my guides are aliens. So it makes me wonder if this is, you know, the first or only time that I've incarnated on Earth.
Interesting. So this may be your first human life.
Correct. And kind of going back to your question a minute ago is, can I take you? I would like to tell you a story about where what I do is a little bit like remote viewing, associative remote viewing.
Okay.
I got a call from a nurse that works with organ donation. Mm-hmm. And she said, can you do some work on this young man that we just did multiple organs? He's failing. He's going the wrong way. Can you see if you can help him? And using her energy, I could find him. I worked with him and just sent him love, just lots of healing love energy until he was overflowing with it. Once he started overflowing with energy, another little boy came into the room, into the quantum room, and he was very gray, very weak, very sad. And so I was done with the one who had received the organs. And I went to this little boy and started giving him lots of love energy and watched him get big and strong and that. And then that love, that healing love energy left him in different streamers. And what I felt like, what I perceived, was that those streams of love energy were going to his family. He was the donor, and he was sending healing love to his family to help them heal from what just happened. And I felt like I needed to know his name. And I asked him, you know, what's your name? And I'm going to say a different thing than what he said, so that it stays anonymous. Yeah. But he says, C. And I'm thinking, Cedric, Calvin, Clyde, you know, I'm going through all these C names trying to, and he's no C, C. He just kept telling me that. And we got done. He was much better. He had helped his family and the session ended. The next day I'm talking to the nurse and I find out that the young boy that received the organs was doing great. He was up moving, would be going home in a couple of days. And then I told her about what happened with the other young boy. I said, I know that you can't really tell me a lot, but I asked his name and he kept telling me C, C. I tell her every time I asked him, C, C. And so I said, can you just say yes if his name's Clyde or Cedric or any of these things? And she started laughing and says, his name's Cece. So he was telling me his name. I wasn't interpreting it right.
Ah, okay.
So kind of along what you were asking me about, if you were in the quantum room with me, could we go to these places? It wouldn't surprise me. It's not something I've attempted, but you know, really the sky's the limit and we're just really starting to investigate this. And I would encourage anybody that's doing this kind of work to try that out and see what happens and to let us know.
Okay. So how does somebody get into something like this? If they were to say, Todd, here's the deal. I want to try to learn to do what you do. I know it's not something I just jump into right away. And all of a sudden I'm right there with you as far as being a slipstream shaman. But how do I start to get into it? What do I do?
That's what my book's all about. The first half of the book is teaching you the processes that I go through and went through to get to this stage and the things that I do daily, teaching you step by step how to do it. And like I said before, if there's something that's not working right for you, change it a little bit until it does. It's okay. You're not going to hurt my feelings. What will hurt my feelings is if you don't get anything out of it. I want people to get something out of this. So the first half of the book is all about showing you how to do these things. The second half is taking you on the experiences that I've had. So you can see what I've seen and you can read about what I've seen and get an idea of what goes on from my perspective. The book is set up to read fast. I want you to be able to read through it in 2 to 3 hours. I don't want it to be a book on your shelf that's there for to look pretty. I want you to get something out of it. If you want to get on it fast, within 45 minutes, you can start working the processes. You can read through there, have enough to start practicing and start accessing your energy and working on finding your quantum room. In the future, over the next 6 months, I'll be setting up some Zoom training to where we'll actually do it together, you know, maybe 1 to 10 of us at a time, and work on it that way as a training seminar in addition to the books, and just see where it goes. I really love when people take something that I can show them and run with it. I've been a retail manager for decades. Mm-hmm. And really the funnest part of my life is when I give a big picture description of something I want done and then watch how somebody does it. I know how I would do it.
Yeah.
And then I watch them do it in such a better way and a faster way. And it makes my heart swell. And that's what I want to see with this. I want to see people learn the processes and just start running with it and really having fun with it and sharing with everybody and creating a community, a real community where we're helping each other grow and we're helping raise the consciousness and raise the vibration of the world. I would love to see us really go to a better place.
That's awesome. Have you ever learned anything from somebody that you now have in your repertoire that has stuck with you?
Yeah, you know, you pick up stuff all the time. You know, like that shaman that was frustrating me so much, she actually did teach me how to find my energy. And one of the ladies I work with, when I send energy to people, it looks like a almost like a phaser, you know, okay, from my Star Trek background. Yeah, you know, yeah, looks like just sending pure energy to them. Hers is this golden light that kind of arches to people and gets on them, and it's like honey, and it slowly goes over them and feeds every part of them. And learning, and then there's other people with different energy going all over the place, very frenetic, and learning from those people that everything is okay. And as we practice it, there's new things to learn. Other than just learning how to access my energy and then taking some of the things that I learned in neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis, you know, to use for part of it. If I have done that, I've forgotten about it. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds weird, but when I do these quantum sessions, I have to take notes immediately. I just started using a dictation program on my phone.
Okay.
If I don't put notes down and I do a session tonight, I won't know it in the morning. I won't remember a thing that I did. My human brain, mm-hmm, is strong enough to see it happening, but not strong enough to hold it. I have to have notes. As I read the notes, I can be taken right back into it. So I probably have learned some things from people and forgotten that I did.
I suppose
it would not surprise me.
I suppose it's like anything. I do 158 shows a year. And if somebody says to me, hey, do you remember that show you did in June with that one guy? I'd go, no, I don't. Well,
you'll remember me, though.
I will. That's that's right, Stephen. No, I mean, Todd, yes, I will remember you. Just because this show has been so different. That's why I'd remember. Plus, you've got Bigfoot for a guide. How do I not remember you? I mean, you know, that's pretty special. I got to tell you.
It is. And it was funny when we got those guides, everybody, you know, one lady was really upset. She got a mouse for a guide. Well, a mouse is great. You know, it brought things to her, but she was hearing about a bear and a moose and an eagle, and I've got two, you know, and so she was really upset, but she's come to understand that mouse came to her for a reason and has done some great things for her. And while most of the people were kind of annoyed that I had two, they also said, yeah, if anybody was going to get Bigfoot, it'd be you.
Hey, if it were Mickey Mouse, I'd be down. You know, Mickey Mouse would be a fun guide. I'd take him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Mighty Mouse. That'd be a good
Mighty Mouse. Yeah.
Mighty Mouse.
There's
excellent.
A lot of good things.
Yeah.
So yeah. And then, yeah, and I don't remember, you know, what they said, you know, what this mouse has taught me is this. And I don't remember what they said, but they took the time to really get to know that guide. They were very happy that they had the mouse and they were very proud of having that mouse.
Well, see, I mean, don't judge a guide by its animal traits.
Exactly.
I guess, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't be happier to have Bigfoot and an elk, but you know, everybody gets their thing for whatever reason, and it's what they need. So
that's right.
Those were the ones I needed.
That's right. That's right. The book is available right now. Slipstream Shaman, Using Quantum Healing for Individuals, Community, the Planet, and Beyond. We have a link to it in the description of this program. Also, we have a link to Todd's website as well, slipstreamshaman.com. You'll be able to participate in all things Todd Wilcox from those links right there. So we encourage you to look into Todd further. Also, Todd's radio show, My Side of the Universe. Click on it, listen to it, and get involved, folks. Kind of expand your world along with Todd. I know I'm gonna look into some of this because you've kind of tripped a few triggers here, Todd. So that is if I survive surgery. We don't know
you
yet
will.
Or not. I will.
You've got this.
Okay, you're sure now.
If it's okay, yeah. I just want to let everybody know if they want to have me do an alignment for them, I will, a healing alignment. Just send me an email and ask for it. I am about a month and a half, 2 months behind because I can only do so many a day.
Okay.
But so I'm really behind. Don't think I'm ignoring you. And also follow me on Instagram and or YouTube. The Instagram is where I'll let you know anytime I do a polymedela, a mini healing like we did with the driving. And so that's where all the new stuff will come out. And so I would encourage you to get subscribe and follow on those.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Todd, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
I have had an absolute blast. Tim, the time has flown by.
It has flown by indeed, my friend. Again, check out Todd's information in the description of this program. Is Slipstream Shaman, Using Quantum Healing for Individuals, Communities, the Planet, and Beyond. Folks, I want to thank you so much for joining us again this week and again being a great and faithful listener. Again, if you loved what you heard this week, go rate and review us. Give us a 5-star review. No matter where you've heard us, if you heard us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you've heard us, iHeartRadio or any of the great outlets where you've heard our podcast. Want to thank our sponsors this week. Want to thank HelloFresh. Want to thank Blue Chew. Want to thank Microdose Gummies. Again, if you enjoy our sponsors or you enjoy the show, be sure to patronize our sponsors. Go out and support our sponsors. They believe in us enough to put their money where their mouth is and where my mouth is. I don't want to tell you where my mouth is. That probably isn't an appropriate thing to say on air. But be sure to patronize our sponsors because they're supporting the show and putting their money forth to keep the show going. And so we'd appreciate it if you let them know and give them a little love and let them know that you appreciate them being there for us as well. And again, one more time, folks, I want to tell you how much I love and appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in every week and letting us know by email, by voice note, by going to darknessradioshow.com and letting us know just how much you love and appreciate the show and the different topics that we bring to you each week. Folks, one more thing before we let you go. Again, it's wintertime. It's cold out there. Be sure to leave this place a little better than what you found it. If you have a chance this weekend, do a little something for your fellow neighbor. Maybe somebody's out there and needs a coat, a hat, or something to get them through the winter, a blanket. Maybe you can provide that for them. Or maybe somebody just needs help shoveling their driveway. Maybe it's snowed and you've got somebody out there who's disabled and needs a little help. Do something for your neighbor out there or a friend out there that needs a little bit of help. Let's leave this place a little bit better than what we found it. Do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio. Again, thanks for another great week of shows. We'll work hard to bring you another great week of shows next week right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.